This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Swing, high fly ball! Belt to right center! And the Braves have won it!
There's a new home run champion of all time! And it's Henry Aaron!
A walk-off homer from Freeman and the Braves win it!
Welcome, everybody, to the latest edition of Behind the Braves, the official podcast of the Atlanta Braves. I'm Ricky Mast, Atlanta Braves digital media content manager. Man, that's a mouthful, but I'm happy to, proud to have that title. Sitting here in person again, feels like old times, with Director of Braves Alumni Relations, Greg McMichael. Greg, you've secured us a lovely conference room to record in today. We're overlooking Truist Park, where the first place Atlanta Braves play, so it's a good day. And we've got a fun guest today, one of your former teammates and one of your, what's the right way to put it, most active alumni, or as you say in the interview, one of your go-to guys, yeah. Marvin
For
Freeman.
Sure.
If you follow Marvin on Twitter or on Instagram or social media, you know what he's all about, that he's got a great personality and he's very active and involved in giving back in a lot of different ways. I didn't realize till we started talking, I think this is before the interview, that Marvin and his family had just moved back here to Atlanta a few years ago, and for some reason I had it in my head they'd just been here for a couple decades and didn't realize that. But I think the reason I thought that is because he's so active in the community and with the Braves and everything that he does. In my mind, it was almost like, well, Marvin's just always been here since he was a player here, which obviously is, you know, not right, is incorrect. But just an interesting conversation with a guy who's got a lot of knowledge and a lot to give to baseball in his community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Marquise Grissom has brought in some guys like himself. You know, Marquise's brother Antonio is the coach at Morehouse, and then Marvin works with that group, and there's just a bunch of them. Dwight Smith is here, Terry Harper's here. So we got a lot of guys in the African American community that are really involved in growing the game, teaching, coaching, helping develop young men, and so really proud of what those guys are doing. And Marvin's been very active with us from an alumni perspective and all the events that we do. But I really love how they've kind of taken hold of, and we've partnered with them to be able to not only enhance what they're doing, but just to try to figure out other areas how we can support them. And for them running our RBI program, that's just not a 1 week event. I mean, that's literally, it's spring, summer, fall. There's a bunch of kids, and now we're working on the softball side too. But from a baseball perspective, we're doing some really good things, and I think, you know, years down the road, we're going to look back at how that really changed the kind of the landscape of Braves country.
I was thinking about that. I feel like we're already starting to see we're really kind of starting to see some of the fruits of all that labor. Because I think about when you and I started the show almost 3 years ago now, and we would have these conversations with Marquise, mm-hmm. Hank Aaron, whoever we were having the conversation with. I think about where we were then and where we are now, and that we're starting to see some things like, as a Braves employee and working here and being involved with this franchise and this organization, it gives me pride when I see within the last couple of weeks our Atlanta Braves RBI baseball team mm-hmm. go and win the MLB RBI World Series. It gives me a lot of pride to see the RBI softball team make it to the championship mm-hmm. game and come very close to win. And not that the trophy is what it's all about,
right,
but seeing those pictures of those kids that they're out there competing at a high level for their group, they're and really just seeing the smiles and the picture, the pictures of them smiling. I think the softball team, I believe they hit a walk-off to make it to the championship game, and the pictures of the young lady who hit the walk-off, like the grin on her face as she was coming to home plate, it really warmed my heart. And it just, I kind of felt that in that pride, like the employee pride of like, I'm glad we're doing this. The same thing I felt when we unveiled the Gresham Park renovation,
right?
Or that when we got the our great people that are working with the community affairs here with the Braves that are going around doing this work, refurbishing other fields.
Yeah, Boys and Girls Club, we did their infield right here in Cobb County. Then we've got kids that have been signed and are playing professional ball through our, you know, the Hank Aaron Invitational and the Hank Aaron Classic, coming through that MLB program that Marvin's a part of. I mean, it's just, it's at all levels. Girls, boys, you know, from ages 9 all the way up through. Now we've got kids that have come through the program that are playing professionally. So I think that's the investment that we've made from, you know, at the executive level and through the foundation, everybody on board with the same perspective that we want to grow the game in this area, whether it's through HBCUs or whether it's through the RBI program. But it takes a commitment, and you have to believe that that's, and as an organization, you have to believe that that's worthwhile, just like for them to believe in what the alumni bring to the table and investing in the alumni association. That all comes from the top, and if those guys don't believe in it and they don't put the resources into it, it's not going to work. And fortunately, we've got people that believe in it, and it's starting to show, like you're saying.
Yeah, and it can't just be a one-off or a like, well, let's write a big check once and then move right along so we can all feel good about ourselves, because don't get me wrong, the big check is a very crucial part of it, but it's making that commitment to keep doing these things every year, to not just the funding, but the resources and the manpower and the planning and the commitment to keep doing it. Not just, you can't just show up once and do it, and that's what we've got here. And even, you know, we decided to have Marvin on this week. We wanted to have him on this week because HBCU Night is coming up at Truist Park, and we felt like that was a good opportunity for us to have him in because he, of course, went to Jackson State. But it's I'm trying to think of the right way I want to say it. I guess it's just, look, I'm a white guy from a rural part of Virginia, the mountains, where it's pretty much everybody I went to school with looked like me. You know, there weren't many that weren't my same race. And so moving here and becoming part of these things, or just working with an organization, working for an organization that's involved in these things, I've learned so much. I've taken in so much. These conversations like the one we have today with Marvin are just important. Selfishly, it's important to me as a person just to learn and grow and be a better person and learn how I can contribute and help. But I have I have such pride in seeing what our team is doing here. I really do. I brought them up already, but those kids in the RBI program, seeing what they've accomplished this year, seeing the Gresham Park and like our prospect Michael Harris and his reaction to when he first saw on the phone or when he first saw what Gresham Park has been turned into from when he played there as a youngster, and he said, he's like, man, y'all are about to make me cry. It's like those are the things, which, by the way, if you haven't heard about Mike Harris from a baseball side of things, you're going to be hearing about him within the next couple of years, because he's going to be really, really darn good. He's going to be playing here at Truist Park, I'll say, within the next couple of years. But I just have such pride as an employee of this organization and the work that we're doing here.
Well, I mean, it's a complicated issue. It's not, if it was all about writing a check, then our government would be, you know, the most efficient government in the world, because they write a bunch of big checks and nothing gets done, you know. So it's more complicated than that. You have to have people, you have to have investment. So I think about Danielle and what she's doing on the foundation side. I think about what we do here night in, night out with different groups, and what the community relations group does. Now, you have to have boots on the ground and people actually putting in the time and energy. And that's why we partnered with MGBA. You know, Marquise and Marvin, they're in the trenches every day working with these kids. And so, yeah, you got to support them financially, but you have to have people that are willing to invest the energy and the time and under the direction of, you know, what we have from an organization. So that's what I'm proud of, is it's not just everybody can write a check from somewhere and say, oh, well, yeah, look what I did to support it. But that's a small part of it. You really have to have the quality people that are willing to invest day in and day out. And that's why I'm proud of what our alumni are doing, because they are the guys that are doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, I wanted to work here, wanted to get involved because I love the game of baseball. I love the Braves, and I love everything that goes along with just the game part of it, and hopefully winning and contending and all of that. It's this other side of things that I really didn't anticipate how much it was going to impact me. And it's not just with guys like Marvin and Marquise and their foundations and the work they do. It's like coming up in September, stuff that you and I are planning and talking about for this show and for other things. Los Bravos night, with the staff and the personnel and the work that has been done there. A brand or part of this organization that didn't even exist when I first got here in 2015 and has now grown into this great thing that does a lot of work. So planning we're doing there. September's Childhood Cancer Awareness Month. The work that's being done there by current former players that we're looking at doing to help support. And it's all those things that really, those are the things I wasn't really thinking too much about when I came here to work. It was all about the baseball side, and I still love the baseball side, but it's this other side of things that we do here. And it's a big part of the reason why we have this show. Yes, we want to talk baseball, but we want to, for all you Braves fans, you know that you're the diehards, you're listening to this show. We want to get you a little bit behind the scenes about some of the other stuff we get to do here that we think is not just as important, but in a lot of cases, even more important than wins and losses on the field.
Yeah, agreed.
Well, we didn't plug it in the interview, so I definitely want to make sure, check out MarvinFreemanYouthFoundation.org. That is Marvin's foundation, which you're going to hear him talk about here momentarily. You'll also hear me talk about him on Twitter, MarvinFreeman84. Give him a follow there. He's a good follow. You won't be disappointed. He's got good stuff, and he keeps it lively and fun and active. So
he does that for sure.
Without further ado, here he is, Marvin Freeman.
Well, Marvin, welcome back to Behind the Braves, and you have been on here before. I think you were with Jerry Royster when we did a podcast about what you're doing with MLB, and we wanted to kind of explore that a little bit more because we've got a couple things coming up. We've got HBCU night here Friday night at the ballpark, which is a big night for kind of from our perspective of how we're supporting growing the game here in Braves country. But also, you've got your hand in a bunch of different things, but I wanted to say this. So Marvin, you lived in Chicago for a long time, and so when you retired, you and I had conversations early on about moving to Atlanta once your kids kind of got out of the house. And so you didn't. Tell me exactly what year was that when you moved?
It was 2015 when we moved down
2015,
here.
Right.
You know, born and raised in Chicago, the winters got a little rough. Once my kids graduated from high school, we decided that it was time to relocate and downsize, and no other place than Atlanta was on our mind. So me and the wife, we packed up, moved down here, had a chance to like blend in with what Marquise is doing with his baseball program, and it just inspired me to kind of want to do some things of my own. Since I was a longtime Brave and I was back in the community, I wanted to be a part of helping stimulate baseball in the Black community and overall, and just really just try and grow the game.
Mm. Well, and I bring that up because I was going to point out the fact that when I started this alumni association back in 2011, you know, we were talking and about it, and then I was encouraging. I've talked to like you and Sid, guys that live in the north. I said, dude, you gotta move to Atlanta. I said, we got tons of stuff going on down here. Love to have you. Obviously, your involvement from the even before you moved down here, but specifically when you moved down here, you've been involved in everything that we've been doing, Alumni Sundays, Alumni Weekend, Fantasy Camp Coach. So you've just been a great supporter of what the organization is doing from an alumni perspective, which I know the fans greatly appreciate that. And so I just wanted to bring that up because you have been one of my go-to guys that does a lot for stuff in the community, for stuff for the fans. So anyway, I think that's been great for me. Because, of course, I wouldn't have a job if it weren't for guys like you and what you're doing. And, of course, you know, we were just out supporting the Braves Foundation and the golf tournament and all that good stuff. So I just wanted to let you know how much I appreciate you and being a part of everything.
I appreciate you, but I love the Braves. The Braves gave me an opportunity to break camp for the first time as a big leaguer in 1990. had a chance to be on some winning ball clubs down here, make some great friends, guys that I'm still real close with to this day. The fans down here, they love the Braves, and I love the fans most of the time. But it was always just a dream of ours to move to Atlanta, but having two kids and not knowing the state of how your baseball career is going to turn out, we wanted to stay close to home. But as soon as they got out of the house, we were flying down here, and this is what we call home now.
Well, one of your passions is pitching, and specifically teaching pitching. So I know you do that on a regular basis. You mentioned working with Marquise in the MGBA, which runs our RBI program, which we're very grateful for you guys and all the great work that you're doing in and around Atlanta with that program and developing the game. And that's something I'm involved in. So I don't know if you know this, but I've now taken over the camp clinic, coaches clinics, and all that kind of stuff everything outside of the RBI program. So that's something I'm going to come alongside and support you guys. And we haven't had that conversation yet, but that's something new on my plate. So I've been passionate about it. But one of the things that I want to bring up is that because you're so passionate, we get to see exchanges on Twitter and how the game is today, pitching. And so just talk a little bit about that, because you are very passionate about pitching and how things should be done and how we develop young pitchers. So talk a little bit about kind of your perspective on that and how that's maybe changed over, since you've been here working with the RBI program.
Well, from my point of view as an African-American pitcher, you just don't see as many, especially at the big league level, as there were when I was playing. There's a big drop off from ages 13 to 15 for pitching because guys know it's really tough. They don't get the kind of instruction that's going to instill that kind of confidence in them to go out there on the mound and believe that they can do it. So they just go to another position, something more glamorous, a shortstop or center field, because everybody wants to hit. But I found that everyone needs pitching at every level. If any kid can throw the ball over the plate, the coach is going to pitch him a lot. So I wanted to make sure these guys had a foundation of trying to be able to not only pitch well, but protect their arms. It's a lot more to it than just throwing the ball. Although it's been an emphasis placed on velocity, a lot of times these guys have no idea what they're doing at 12, 13, 14 years old. So I try to give them some basic fundamentals, and as they grow physically and mature in their bodies, they're still able to kind of grow as a pitcher. And so having that confidence to go out there, knowing that they can do things the right way, it only makes the job a little bit easier. And you and I know both that it's not easy at all being in the middle of that diamond, and so much responsibility is placed on you. And just trying to instill confidence in these young kids to continue to go on and try and move up to the next level, be it high school or college or even pros, has always been a passion of mine, because I needed guys to help me on the way, and I still remember how those guys helped me, and hopefully that'll be my legacy. These guys will remember how I tried to devote my time and efforts in helping them get better as well.
For sure. Well, Marvin, in the next month or September will be 3 years we've been – Greg and I have been doing this podcast, almost 100 episodes, and I actually had somebody ask me last night, what is your favorite interview? And we always have a hard time choosing, but we both always end up going back to, I think, well, we got to interview Hank, and that was – it's like, how can you top that, right? But I started – after I said that, I started going through some of my favorite things and moments and topics, and I said, you know, I think one of the things that has stuck with me the most in the 3 years we've been doing this was when we had Marquise on, and we were talking about all the work that he does here in the community and with his program. And I was asking, what can we as an industry do better to get more African-American participation in baseball from a youth level and hopefully get the participation rate or get those rates at the big leagues higher? And he said, well, I'm not trying to train guys to get to the big leagues. I'm trying to raise men. It stuck with me so much because I'm always so focused on, well, we got to get the participation rate. We got to get more African-American participation in the big leagues, which is important for the growth of the game, I think. But when he said that kind of, it just struck me. And he's like, no, I'm trying to raise men here, trying to give these guys, you know, more opportunities and get them into the real world. How much of that of the work you're doing is I would have to think that has to be of importance to you too, is trying to give these kids direction and just some guidance in life, right?
Yeah, that's the whole basis of my foundation. My foundation is built on mentoring youth, trying to instill values in them that will help them not only get a better grasp on how to handle life, but baseball is like just a byproduct of what we do. That's just something that they can really, I can get my hooks in them and get them interested in the things that I'm saying. A lot of kids that I work with, they're from single family homes. They don't have that male influence. They don't have that male role model to kind of look up to or instruct them on how to carry themselves in today's world. And it's tricky, you know, trying to maneuver yourself in a way that's not going to put you in a bad light, but also not going to make you think you've sold yourself down the river as far as trying to conform to somebody else's beliefs. It's just really making guys understand that life is a game and you have to know how to play it the right way in order to succeed or move to the next step. So that's what I really try and do. Me and my wife, we try to really motivate these kids to have better academic preparation. And that's the premise for them being able to come and do all the free clinics and trainings that I do. They have to maintain a strong grade point average. We have writing skills competitions that we kind of reward these kids for at the end of the year. This year we're going to give away 3 laptop computers, and our foundation is really small, so if we can touch one kid a year, then we feel like we've made some progress. So that's what we try to do. We try to let these guys be able to build character and have a foundation so that they can become better humans, better human beings, and better members of society.
I think it's noteworthy for all the different programs because, you know, yeah, you do have your foundation, but I mean, you got your hands in so many things. And I think about, I don't know if you're involved in the Players Alliance, but, you know, we've got that program that's going on through the MLBPA. And then obviously the Hank Aaron Classic, the Hank Aaron Invitational through the MLB Development Program, where you go down to Vero for a couple weeks and you're spending a lot of time just working with these guys. And then you're the Futures Game coach, you know, pitching coach. You've been involved in that. And then on top of that, that you got the RBI program, and we got these fall development programs. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff. So you spend a lot of time working with these kids on not only getting opportunities, but really developing those skills that they need. So what would you say the overarching, you know, are we doing well from a baseball industry of pouring into these kids and giving them opportunities, or do you think there's a lot more work to do?
Well, there's always a lot more work to do based on the fact that when I grew up, a lot of coaches volunteered. They volunteered their time, they volunteered their money, they volunteered their resources. Now with the explosion of travel baseball and things of that nature, is so expensive to even just go out and practice. I mean, we used to ride past fields and we can go out there and put a sandlot game together. Now I rarely see anybody on a baseball field on their own without some coach barking instructions over them. So they don't really get a chance to learn how to move. They don't really get a chance how to understand what they can do. So mostly it's like everybody's trying to build that perfect baseball player and not let these kids go out and discover their own talents. I try to instill a practice technique that these kids can take at home in the backyard, do it anything. When I was growing up in Chicago, I couldn't go outside in the winter and throw a baseball, so I flipped my mattress up in my room and threw into that, just trying to be creative, knowing that I had to still work on my craft no matter what the circumstances that surrounded you are. You still got to go out there and try and do things that's going to make you better. In addition to that, I knew that I couldn't play baseball if I didn't get the grade. So my parents really, really looked at my report card and made sure that was taken care of first before I got all these extra things. And so just being able to give those values to kids nowadays that they might not be getting them, that's my pleasure.
Talking about academics, I think that's a good segue into what we've got coming up here Friday night at Truist Park with HBCU Night. You, of course, played, went to Jackson State, and I just wanted to kind of ask what was that experience like and the impact of HBCU schools. And I know with the Braves, we're the reason we're having this night, we're trying to support those programs as much as we can. Talking about favorite episodes of the show last year for HBCU night, we had Ralph Garr and we had Coach Hollins from Tuskegee on. And Coach Hollins is one of my favorite people we've met in the 3 years we've been doing this. The enthusiasm he brought was fantastic. So just the experience and of going to an HBCU and what things we can do to better support those programs.
Well, coming out of high school, I've always wanted to go to Jackson State anyway. A couple of baseball players that went to my high school ended up going down to Jackson State, and when they came back, they relayed some of the information and the experiences that they had. And
don't tell me that's Oil Can Boyd.
Oil Can Boyd, Charlie Scott, Dave Clark, Wes Chamberlain.
That's right. I played against Wes and Dave.
You know, the Howard Farmer and Mike Farmer brothers, Kurt Ford. So we had quite a few big leaguers come out of there, and they would all come back in the fall. And what I liked about it was that it was so much trash talk, but it was on a good nature.
You like that?
I love it.
Oh, my gosh. That's hard to believe.
The trash talk was grade A, man. And when I first got down there, like we talked about having better resources, I thought the field was going to look like Truist Field when I got down there, and it looked like a goat pasture. And I asked the coach, I was like, this is the practice field, right? He's like, no, we cut the grass and we get out there and get after it. He was like, it ain't where you play, it's how you play. And Coach Brady was one of the guys that really he made a man out of me when I got to Jackson State. Growing up, again, in Chicago, I pitched in 30-degree weather, and guys didn't want to swing the bat too well up there when it's cold, and I just had this false sense of security that I was the greatest thing that ever lived. And when I got down there, and them big old boys in the South, man, they got to look at that fastball, and it was like steak and potatoes. Man. They were swinging out there, you know what. And I remember the first game I pitched, I got lit up, and I'm on the bus, and I'm tearing my uniform off. I'm like, I just didn't know how to handle getting punished like that. And Coach got on the bus and he told me, hey, look, this is going to happen again. So it's how you handle these things that's going to shape you. And I learned to, make adjustments. I learned to pitch better. I learned to kind of avoid just doing the things that put me in that situation and made me feel that way. And, I just can't thank him enough. I still talk to him to this day. And he's always been a great inspiration in my life down at Jackson State.
Well, one of the things one of my favorite alumni is Ralph Garr, and you know Ralph well, longtime Brave scout, and we just put together, I guess we're getting ready to do our second one, but the Lucas and Garr Classic. Ruby Lucas, and of course, is here with us, and so we've got this tournament where we're taking their two alma maters, Bill Lucas's and Ralph Garr's, and they're playing in a tournament here or a game here at the stadium. And so I think about Ralph and what he tells the stories of going, growing up and in college and how he played, and he's got just a great perspective, and he loved it, and it was just, yeah, it wasn't, nothing. I don't think any of us played on fields like this.
Well, you did. You went to tennis.
Well, I don't know. Compared to, I guess there's always something nicer, right? You're looking at it. We were always in awe of Mississippi State and LSU and all those schools.
Yeah.
But we've had a chance to talk with Ralph about his experience in playing, and one of the things that I love about what we're doing here is we're not only just recognizing these schools, but we're actually going in and we're buying tractors. We're doing field refurbishment. We're trying to figure out how can we support you. One of the things that breaks my heart, and I Antonio, and he's down at Morehouse. He has one scholarship.
Yeah,
and it's like, how in the world can you compete? How in the world can you be committed to baseball with one scholarship? So I know that we're actively working with him on how we can support Morehouse, because you can't expect baseball to grow with those kind of stuff when you don't have a field, when you don't have your own field, when you don't have the ability to keep it up and to grow. So that's one thing I'm proud about the organization and how we're doing it. And that's at the college level. And of course, there's a lot of work to do before that. Like you said, baseball's become very, very expensive, and there's no more pickup ball. And so we're trying to find ways. And that's what I love about what you guys are doing through the RBI program. Your experience at Jackson State Is there anything else that you see that where we could come alongside and help an organization like Jackson State, a school, from their baseball program that maybe we're not seeing at this point?
You know, other than the fact that there's only like one assistant coach that's being paid, the coaching is kind of diluted. Just being able to really train these guys, and I know sometimes when we go in and try and put our, you know, fingers on a particular player, sometimes the coaches get a little, you know, they feel a certain way. They feel like we're trying to overstep what they're teaching and things of that nature. But really, we're just trying to show that, you know, we came through the same situation. We're just trying to pass on what we know, some things that they may not have heard. And, you know, these college coaches got so many things that they got to contend with, trying to recruit, trying to get, you know, funds, trying to make sure their fields are up to par. And, you know, it's just going to be a situation where the kids are going to have to get more help coming in financially. You know, when you got two or three scholarships and you're trying to maintain a program that's going to have interest from kids that's outside looking in, they want to know why you're not winning. It's hard to win if you can't get the players, and the players won't come if they got to pay. You know, you got a guy that's a two-way player. He's a football player. He's a baseball player. He's going to take the scholarship that's going to pay for his college education, and baseball is just not it. You know, getting more fans at the games down there, those things are, you know, things that can improve as well. But, you know, until the quality of play and the scouting is more geared toward looking at these guys and letting them believe that they have an opportunity to get to the next level, then, you know, guys will still be looking for the big power colleges to mm-hmm. go to, the facilities and all those things. They're like a dangling, shiny object in front of you. And then when you get there, I see so many guys trying to transfer because they're not getting the kind of playing time. Mm. That was the main reason why I went to Jackson State, too, because the coach told me, he said, you're going to play until you prove you can't play anymore. It wasn't, you prove that you can play and then we'll play you. He promised me something when I got out of high school. I went down there. He stuck with me. And back then, when you go to college, you're there for at least till you graduate, mm-hmm. flunk out, or get drafted. Now you got these schools that got exit meetings after every year. They're telling guys you're getting released. You know, you're getting released from a college scholarship. That sounds absurd to me, but, you know, it's just the way things have evolved and developed. And until we get more resources to help these guys compete financially, it's going to still be tough to get good quality baseball players for, you know, a widespread array of the teams that's down in these HBCUs.
Yeah, we need to get Dion to help out on the baseball side and have him recruit some more two-way players. Let the football team pay for the scholarship and the baseball team gets the player, right?
That's what we do. We just take a couple of them football scholarships and move it over to the baseball side, and then you'll have a lot more availability for guys to kind of come down there and pay for their education mm-hmm. and play as well.
So one of my favorite follows, Greg, on Twitter is Marvin Freeman 84. He's one of my absolute favorites. Like, for instance, yesterday I woke up and my entire timeline was full of the egg crate challenge. And if you go through Marvin's timeline right now, he's already got a funny, really funny Photoshop of him pitching on top of a pyramid.
Here we go.
With stability is key. And he says, a shaky beginning may be your downfall. And if you scroll through Marvin's timeline, it is just fantastic because it's a mixture of really funny topical stuff like that, but then also just really great motivational stuff. So I'm just curious, like, how did you start getting so active in all of that? And it seems like, and I'm just guessing here, it seems like you enjoy it. It seems like you have fun with it.
I do. I enjoy it because it gives me a way to kind of stay in contact with the players that I used to coach. I get to monitor their pages and make sure they're not putting anything stupid up that may cost them something down the road. And plus, it gives me a chance to kind of say what I want to say and respond to whoever I want to respond to. because again, you know, sometimes, you know, you get these guys on here, they got Twitter muscles and they get a lot more brave online than they do in person. So, I mean, I just try and keep it light. I try and make sure that it's either going to be inspirational or funny. I try to stay away from topics that's going to cause a lot of arguing or dissension, and just try and make it fun. It's social media, so I'm just trying to be social on it, but mainly because I have so many players that's on there, and I want them to see and hear the messages that I give out on a constant basis.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of my favorite things to watch on Twitter, a lot of times they'll show these videos of about 10 guys standing around and one pitcher on the mound, and then you got the radar gun in the back and he throws a pitch and they're all like cheering like he just won the lottery. And then it says, yeah, I just went from 80 miles an hour to 85 over the summer. And it's like they're just, it's like the carnival.
Right? It is a carnival.
It's a carnival.
I'm waiting on somebody to come out with a big stuffed teddy bear and hand it over to the guy, and everybody just starts eating cotton candy. But it's hilarious to me. I like to see when they run and take like a 25-step running start and then throw the ball into a net with a coach standing behind it with a radar gun. And he's going, 98. I'm like, okay. And then you see the same guy on the mound and he's 86 or 84. And he's like, how come I can't get that same velocity? I'm like, well, if you start running from second base, you might be able to get some of that
That's
juice.
Right. It's not the javelin, right?
Oh, man. It's crazy. It's crazy what they're promoting and teaching out there. But hey, you know, you got a lot of parents that want that quick fix, that quick result. They're gonna buy into some things that they don't really understand because some coaches told them, hey, this is how we're gonna get your son, you know, to the next level, or this is how we're gonna get your son to one of these big giant universities so he can get a chance to be drafted. And you know, it's just really smoke and mirrors. And I try and, you know, debunk all of that with reality, you know, like I say, it don't matter how, you know, I hear so many coaches say, well, you know, all you got to do is work hard and you can make it to the major leagues. I'm like, well, you know, it's a little bit more than that. Yeah. You got to be able to have some talent, some resiliency. You got to be able to be in the right situation. It's just so much more to it than going out and just lifting weights and trying to see if you can throw a ball as hard as you can. We've seen how that's working for a lot of these guys in the big leagues. Shorter careers, not able to locate, and hitters are swinging and hitting balls farther than they've ever been hit before. So, you know, there's still going to be something to pitching, changing speeds, and being able to get guys to hit the ball on the ground. And that's what I focus on. The things that made me successful, things that I know work for sure, because when I first came to the big leagues, it was right around the time Dwight Gooden was breaking in, striking out 300. I was like, yeah, that's going to be me. I'm going to be the next Doc Gooden. Man, they was tearing me up. Well, I was like, I better go back to sinking this ball, trying to throw a slider, find out what a changeup really is. And because I didn't plan on just pitching, you know, 1 or 2 years. I wanted to have a career, and I knew that it was going to take, you know, the ability to learn how to pitch to be able to do that. Because once you've seen 95 from one guy, the next guy don't look so surprising to you. So you better learn how to take what you have and make the best of it. Right, Greg?
You got it. Jeff Francoeur was talking to me the other day, but he was trying to break into, I guess there was a U.S. amateur or something. He was playing in a golf tournament, and he came back so dejected. And he said something like, man, my practice rounds were so good, and I went down there and I just wet the bed. And I said, well, yeah, it's kind of like pitching in the bullpen.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of people get the 27 Yankees out in the bullpen.
Yeah. They cross that line, boy, and that white line fever hits you, man. It's something you can't shake.
That's right. Well, we appreciate you coming on, and you know, you had a great career. You played 10 seasons, and you got to start, you got to relieve. You're on, you know, championship teams, and so you just and I'm glad you're passing along all that knowledge and wisdom that you have. We appreciate what you're doing with the RBI program and all the young men that you're influencing. So enjoy HBCU night. I know you and Marquise are going to be here, and we're going to have a great time. So thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. Anytime, and I'll have my number 13 Jackson State uniform on.
Nice.
All right. That's
Look
awesome.
Forward to it.
That's going to be great. Thank you, Marvin. Our thanks again to Marvin Freeman for joining us here on Behind the Braves, one of your great Braves, our great Braves alumni, Greg. And so this weekend, big series with the Giants here at Truist Park. And Sunday, of course, is Alumni Sunday. You just told me who we've got on. And Daryl Chaney, of course, remember Daryl Chaney. And then one of my all-time kind of fan favorite players, Matt Diaz, is going to be here. So it's I don't believe we've seen – can't remember the last time I saw Matty D around here. It's been a little bit, hasn't it?
Yeah. Well, he lives in Florida, so we don't get the chance to see him a lot. But he's been involved in fantasy camp over the years, and he's a lot of fun. He's a funny guy. And so I'm glad he's coming back. He's bringing his son. And then so we'll have them out in the plaza from 11:30 to 12:30 on Sunday. So come get an autograph. We've got cool baseball cards we'll be handing out. And then I'll do a little Q&A, as always, after we're done for everybody inside the stadium and in the plaza. So be good to hang out with them for a few hours and hear what they're up to.
One thing, one quick note about Matt Diaz. I remember when he was first signed on with the Braves or came to the Braves, I think it was around 2006. And then he was, you know, he ended up being here for a few years. And I remember it was like I don't even know how it came up, but somehow it came up in the press. It was like a point of pride with him that he was not going to, that he didn't have like a big, very expensive sports car or anything. Well, those particular eras of Braves, there were a lot of big jacked up trucks on those, mm-hmm. that particular era. But at Turner Field, and I was just a fan back then, so I'd come to games, and you could walk, you could oversee, if I'm in the ballpark, you could see out, and you could see the players lot, and you could see all sure. the cars sitting there. And there was a lot of fancy sports cars, a lot of big jacked up trucks. And that kind of thing.
And then his Honda.
And then there was his, I think it was a Nissan Maxima.
Okay.
Something like that. Or maybe
nothing
it was
wrong
Honda,
with a Honda Accord, but.
Hey, yeah, I'm all for it. There was a time when I was younger where I always wanted the big, expensive, fancy car. I'd always like really sought after that. And mm-hmm. now I guess I'm just getting to be an old fart, but now I'm just like, nope, not spending my money on that. Mm-hmm. I don't want it.
I think the older we get, we realize that, maybe that wasn't the best thing to do.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, but it always cracked me up. I'd look over in the players' lot and see that one that you knew was Matt Diaz's car because it was parked amongst the others. And somebody asked him about it, and I'll have to look up the quote. But it was like a point of pride with him. He's like, "Yes, runs great. What do I need anything else for?" So that'll be fun. Daryl Chaney and Matt Diaz in the plaza.
Very good.
Good deal. All right. Well, thanks again to Marvin Freeman for joining us, and thanks as always to all of you for listening and rating, reviewing, subscribing, and spreading the good word about this podcast. We very much appreciate it. For Greg McMichael, I'm Ricky Mast. We'll see you next week on Behind the Braves. Hey, Braves Country. We just wanted to remind you to rate, review, and subscribe Behind the Braves on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or at braves.com/behindthebraves, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you, and we'll see you next time on Behind the Braves.